Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poehler. And I have two guests today, Jim Shahan, who is a blogger for the Albany Times Union, and my friend Dan Platt, who is running for county executive on the Green Party line in Albany. And they're here to discuss their thoughts on the presidential candidate debate of a couple of days ago. So, gentlemen, I'll start off with Dan. What do you think?
I thought it was an okay group interview. It was very entertaining. I certainly had a good time at the party I went to, which was a bit more relaxed since it wasn't a Sanders rally party. And because of that, there were a few people who were actually impressed by Lincoln Chafee, who's the only actual peace candidate. A few things to cover when talking about this is the context of a media that serves the establishment, that is the establishment and is very much a part of it. I think it was one comedian referred to the mass media as being the entertainment wing of the military-industrial complex, meaning that there are many topics that won't be covered, including money out of politics. It was kind of in taxes and economy. It was kind of up to the candidates to mention that in shots. Bernie Sanders kind of started strong by mentioning it right off the bat, and then again towards the end. I think it should be pointed out, I watched it on an online stream, and it was 3 hours. But I've been hearing other people say it was 2 hours, meaning if they watched it on TV, there was an hour cut away. And that's a lot missing, especially since there's been some talk on the blog circuit that they cut out anything that if candidates were criticizing the media, like when the earliest emails came up. And the biggest controversy pointed out could be the fact that the sixth Democratic candidate, Lawrence Lessig, who is running completely on a platform, money out of politics, he was polling 1%, meaning he met the criteria for entering the debate on CNN's terms. But then CNN changed the rules so that not only would he need more than 1%, then they stopped including his name in the polls. Which is what the establishment does when someone they don't want in the debates starts getting slightly popular.
Jim, what was your reaction to the debate?
Overall, I thought it was fun to watch in a different way than the Republican debate has been. This is more issue specific, I thought, and less name calling than the Republican side has been. But I thought it was interesting. I think, from a candidate standpoint, I thought Hillary did what she had to kind of right the ship in terms of mainstream opinions. She was poised. She reminded people that, she's possibly out of the whole field of 58 people running for president on both sides, that she's probably one of the two most qualified, most experienced people. I think she managed to do a good job of looking competent and well-informed and poised, but she didn't really say anything of substance about her policies or her vision. I thought Bernie really did that. I think out of all the debates on both sides so far, he kind of was the only person to give a real glimpse of what his presidency would look like and what his agenda is. Overall, I thought it was good to see some of the like Martin O'Malley and Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee get some TV time because their campaigns haven't really seen much attention at all. So it's kind of interesting to see what they had to say. And overall, I think, to kind of go off of what Dan was talking about, the post-debate spin has been pretty interesting. Because if you look at online reaction and web reaction, generally on social media, Bernie seems to be the guy who most people kind of rallied around and thought won. But the main story out of CNN, CBS, all the major news networks was Hillary dominating the field. And I think it's an interesting disconnect between what people are seeing and reacting to and what is being driven as the story.
No, I watch CNN. I'm sorry, I watch MSNBC, you know, sometimes when I want to find out what's going on. And I think it was the night before last, I put on Lawrence O'Donnell's show. Now, Lawrence O'Donnell classifies himself as being way to the left. You know, I think he classifies himself as a socialist. I mean, really left-wing politics. And he was, like, at the beginning of the show, he was going, oh, Hillary this, oh, Hillary that. You know, Hillary's great. And, you know, as a left-of-center person, he has to be aware that Hillary is to the right of him. And it's like, he was like, you know, it was like a love fest. And I'm thinking to myself, here's a journalist who is not using artistic creativity. He's compromising it. And it was all scripted. And it was all scripted by the powers that be that wrote the script, the corporate media. Would any of you two like to discuss that? You know, do you think that's reality, or am I thinking too much into it? Jim?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean,
no, for sure.
The mainstream media is pretty clearly from the get-go really only talked about Hillary as a candidate, whether it was the emails or the Benghazi stuff. And the debate gave an opportunity for them to drive a narrative to be driven that wasn't about that. It was about her sounding presidential, her being on top of things, her being on the attack. And it fit into the narrative of her campaign and of the way the media coverage has gone, I think. I think also while talking about Lawrence O'Donnell being self-describing himself as far to the left, in the sense of Hillary Clinton, I think this debate showed it to people who really watched. I've always assumed she was to the left. I don't really know where she stands on anything. It seems that for her, it's about being the president. That's more than any big ticket ideology. And I think it's an easier narrative for the media to discuss how well she does within that framework than somebody who, like a Bernie Sanders type, who has major changes to the system proposed.
Dan?
Yeah, I think it's important this is a good opportunity to know what Hillary Clinton's positions are is to simply investigate what the establishment's positions are. Like, what positions do you need to be part of the establishment? And that's the case of being a senator or especially being president. So one of those positions is being imperialist, meaning foreign entanglements, as it could be called, invading countries, drone strikes, being interventionist, and not just in a peaceful humanitarian way with aid. It means not raising taxes on the rich. It means not expanding social programs or reforming them in a more, even more progressive way. This would be a good opportunity. I'll describe shortly, briefly, my version of socialism. Bernie gave kind of an eighth grade description of, you know, Dem socialism, though to be more accurate, he's a social democrat. That's what Scandinavia is, and still very much capitalist. And socialism, although a lot of Merriam-Webster was reporting that there was a spike in searches for it, meaning there are actually a lot of people looking up what socialism was, at least the short definition. The longer definition is that it's simply the collective or a group ownership of the means of production, meaning the workplaces, the factories, land, air, water, natural resources. And it is a move away from private property rights. I like this one quote from an industrialist that the poor may inherit the earth, but not its mineral rights. Meaning that a point about how hopefully more people are getting wise to, especially when they see the debate and they think something about it, and then the coverage after because it's ever less subtle, more blatant how bullshit it is. So hopefully many liberals and others will be discovering, figuring out that it wasn't just the Republicans and Bush-Cheney that was terrible in the last 20 years, that it was the media, too, was also terrible, that they lied us into the war, that they don't cover things fairly. They always cover, call it even, between the two corporate parties, and they always exclude the Greens. When will CNN, have a Green Party primary? We have five candidates. But there won't be one.
Jim?
And it could be, and it'd be very entertaining as well. But that's not the point.
I think to kind of go off of what Dan was talking about, I think this debate was kind of a microcosm of kind of where the Democratic Party's been in the last 20 years and where liberalism has gone, where there's the establishment wing, and then there's the further to the left, the Bernie Sanders, and, you know, beyond that, like a Dennis Kucinich last couple cycles before this, and the Green Party now, where it's the Democratic Party's been more about maintaining a status quo, whether it was Al Gore in 2000 or John Kerry's 2004 campaign was basically centered around bringing things back to what it was like before Bush-Cheney, to kind of almost more of a centrist worldview. And then you have a Bernie Sanders type this year who's kind of, whether it's, you know, a social democrat or democratic socialism, whatever paradigm we want to look at him at, it's a major change in rhetoric and message from a leading candidate in the Democratic Party for president in a long time.
You know, one of the things that I found very interesting was when Bernie Sanders said to Hillary and to the American public, "I'm sick of the emails." And it was, you know, the email controversy. And it was at that point I realized, hey, what's wrong with this picture? It was like they were buddy-buddy, and, you know, Bernie was trying to, like, boost her up. Both of you, what did you think of that particular moment when Bernie was there to kind of booster Hillary Clinton?
I thought he's kind of been on that message from the onset over the last couple of months when they asked him about it. He hasn't really cared about the emails. So I don't know if it was like an in-the-bag, like, helping Hillary moment there so much as him just staying on message. And I think he kind of, because he's made his campaign much more about an issue while developing a cult of personality for himself on the campaign trail, he's been much more issue-driven than the media narrative typically goes with. And I think in a way it's just saying what had to be said. I mean, there's a lot of issues that need to be talked about that haven't been for far too long.
Dan?
Yeah, the blogosphere is kind of interpreting it as an attack on the media. You know, he says, "We are sick of hearing about Hillary Clinton's emails." I don't watch cable news, all right? You know, it's the same way that I don't eat high salt foods. I can guess that they've been covering the email scandal for half of their coverage time, meaning half the day. So maybe it's a response to that. So, and now it could be that certain, you know, Bernie fans or liberals want or seeing what they want to see. And then this is just a possibility. I'm not actually saying it's likely. But it's just how uncertain these times are, rather than how uncertain the media makes us, and that nothing's presented clearly. That when, and an example of this is in CNN's debates and Fox News' as well, or any cable news debate, they never ask the same, well, they have, but they usually don't ask the same question to all the candidates. So you don't actually hear all the candidates in an equal amount of time. And that's kind of why Jim Webb was complaining about basically being interrupted, and Bernie and Clinton get to rebuttal each other three times over. So they talk about Trolls for 15 minutes and other culture war issues. And then Jim Webb is left to, with his single 2 minutes. And it's like, well, they talked for 6 minutes each. Could I talk for 4 minutes? And she's like, well, those aren't the rules you agreed to. And that's pretty much the American justice system in a nutshell. There's a set of rules for people who are up front, who are popular, who have some more money in their accounts, who are getting more attention, who are representing what people are paying attention to. And then if you're marginalized in the to begin with, you're going to keep being marginalized.
Can I jump in for a second about...
Sure, of course.
About Jim Webb, to that point about him not really getting time. I felt for him, but, you know, nobody was calling him Martin O'Malley, and he made the time to talk on the stage. Jim Webb could have used his time more effectively and could have been more assertive as well, even though, as we've seen in the debates, it was mostly Hillary and Bernie. But, I mean, Martin O'Malley inserted himself into the picture often, for better or for worse, depending on how you feel about Martin O'Malley. I don't think Webb was as assertive. For a guy who's held zero campaign events this year, he kind of missed his opportunities to kind of, you know, forge his own path, make his own destiny here. Because once you start calling out the moderator and telling, you know, complaining to Anderson Cooper they're not doing a good job of not calling on you, you're just not, it's not fair, but you're not going to get the time to talk. You gotta do something.
But that's now, blaming the players and not the game.
Right. I mean, the game...
And I'm not defending about Webb, but it's just a greater point about how rigged everything is.
Right, but I mean...
corporate media.
Right, yeah. I mean, corporate media is, you know, by and large, crap. But, you know, Jim Webb's been in the game for a long time. He knows what he's getting into. And if you know the... I mean... If you're in a game, you're a pawn in a game that you're going to lose in, you gotta sack up and do something. I mean...
Yeah. You gotta play a different game.
Right.
Sure.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed, and Dan, I'm sure you've already said to this, is the fact that Green Party candidate Jill Stein is not getting much coverage at all. And I had seen her at the... Capital last year, and she was articulating issues really, really good. And, you know, the fact that Jill Stein is not getting any coverage, and that could be a way for people to really broaden their perspective on the presidential candidate. Dan, why don't you speak about your feelings, Jill Stein, and what's wrong?
Well, here's where it gets a little complicated. Outlets like RT and Al Jazeera are also corporate, but they will actually cover Jill Stein and have her on sometimes. And Democracy Now! Is certainly having Jill Stein on rather frequently, at least once a month, perhaps. And that's a lot more than the last time she ran for president. And seeing her speak in the Capitol when she was last in town, and she should be around again soon, though I don't know how. Hasn't been set up yet. I would say she meets the presidential test, meaning like she looks, she sounds, she talks presidential, whatever that means, but it just means that you have your shit together to most people. And she has actual plans. You know, we talk Green New Deal. I would rephrase it as a Green Way Forward, so we're not just repeating what happened in the 30s, where we got this huge coalition together, and then as soon as basically conservatives went on the attack with McCarthyism, it all fell apart. Rather, they picked off one part of that coalition at a time. First they came for the communists, then the socialists, then the labor union people, and then when no one was left, I was just left to talk about the culture war. That's what neoliberalism and that's kind of what happened in the last 80 years, 60 years. Let's see. Oh, yes, Jill Stein. I'd also point out, and I pointed this out during the summer, that there's about 5 primary candidates. One is an actual black woman. She changed her name, and it's Miss Curry. And We have some other guys. You know, we have a theorist. We have a guy who's a public servant who's has a lot of organizing experience. So, you know, and the Greens are a party of activists, and we should get due attention. The excuse that the corporate media, or rather, you know, say, let's say CNN will give, is that, well, if we do a Green Party debate, not enough people will watch it. Because, see, Greens, they'll only go off of what percentage of the population identifies Green. And, but then how will anyone know about us? How does anyone know about us? You know, it's they can make the same argument for atheists. Well, only 1% of the country are atheists. Why do we want to do a program on atheists? And now they'll do programs on atheists all the time, at least whenever it suits them, because other people want to learn about atheists and secular life and alternatives to organized religion, especially people under 30. And that goes for alternatives in politics. So, yes, have Greens, have libertarians. Libertarians should have multiple candidates. It's just a big fight just to be included in the general election debate, and we have to sue them for it.
Jim?
I think Dan just did a great job tracing the history and travails of third-party politics in America in the 20th century. I think if this election is showing anything based on the amount of support Bernie has in the Democratic field and how some the outsiders on the Republican side, the Trumps, the Carsons, the Fiorinas, not talking about what they're saying, necessarily the details of what they're saying, but like their message is that outsider's perspective. People see there's a huge gulf and a huge thing in America right now. People just want to hear what they think is real talk, what people think about the issues, what they actually think, what they say they're going to do, whether it's stick it to the Wall Street banks or build a wall around America. People want to hear tough and real answers. And I think third parties serve a role in kind of enforcing candidates to take stances on issues, actual stances as opposed to platitudes and talking points. I mean, we've seen just from Hillary this year, she's had to take a stance on the Keystone Pipeline finally and issues like that. So I think it's never bad for a democracy to have as many voices talking and providing their thoughts and their potential solutions as possible.
But it seems like the when there's a debate or whatever, the lesser known candidates remain lesser known because the media will not cover them. How do you feel?
I mean, I think it's unfair to those candidates. I think that if you're a viable presidential candidate, if you can form a committee, you can get yourself on the ballot in 50 states or however many states as possible, you should have a seat at the table and you should be discussed. I think that's only fair.
Dan?
It makes me wax revolutionary because the real reason that they don't is because they're scared of what happens when people are actually informed of all their choices. When people get more left. And by left, I do mean more socialist and more less imperialist and more libertarian. And this freaks the ownership, the owner class, say the 1%, it freaks them out. They get really scared. It sends pollsters like Frank Luntz into a tizzy. And so there's many different paths to social change. You know, Bernie Sanders talks of political revolution, and that's a different way of saying regime change. And to actually have that would not just be to elect Bernie Sanders, but that if next year there is a wave of Democratic Party primary candidates who are also social Democrats, identify themselves as social Democrats, not just saying they're progressive. They can say they're progressive, but the policies they're proposing, the platforms, need to be social democratic, the same as politicians in Germany or Denmark. And that would be an actual political revolution. Now, I'm more for social revolution, which is actually not just changing the government, but changing the way our economy and our politics relate to each other and how we relate to each other. And that's a much longer process. It's a generational one. And it includes educating ourselves, looking into transition movement and other struggles. And I encourage people to look into them. There's many Facebook posts, pages.
Now, as you know, I did not contact either of you for the Republican debate. Yes or no? Do you think that there is a good possibility Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee, Jim?
I don't think he will be the nominee, but I think he's got a shot. I mean, what polls came out yesterday, he's winning in South Carolina, he's winning in Nevada. He could win. I don't think he will win the nomination. I think Marco Rubio is going to win the nomination. I think he has the right aesthetic to appeal to the establishment of the Republican Party as well as the more Tea Party fringe elements on that side. But, yeah, Trump's got a chance. I mean, you can't be leading the polls for 3 months and not have a shot. It's longer than any Republican candidate has led. It's longer than anybody led in 2012. Romney, Perry, all those guys at the same time 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
Dan?
Equivocally, no. He has led for 3 months, the summer of Trump, I guess. But it seems his momentum has petered out, and he's reached peak nationalist. The game plan for the donors is to consolidate their money and resources behind, say, as Jim says, Marco Rubio and Jeb. Long before in March, Jeb won the money primary. This was where Romney and Jeb were competing for those 300 donors that give the most money. And they called all of them, and Jeb won that fight by getting more donors. And that basically, in my mind, sealed him as the Republican candidate. Because it's money that rules, not people. It doesn't matter how popular Trump is, even, and his popularity seems to be peaking at 30-40%. That means that all the other Republican candidates can consolidate into a 60% block, and the rest will fall behind. And then even the nationalists will have to grin and bear it. Many of them may not show up to the polls, but they're pretty consistent. I don't know those numbers, but the lesser evilism is very strong in both camps, both Democrats and Republicans. And the only way to break that is to vote for the greater good, and that's going third party, leaving the parties that I would consider dying, at least by attrition, meaning young people aren't joining the Democratic Party. And that's why it was so important to run someone who could bring in young people again like Obama did in 08, because there was a lot of the Bernie campaign was all about registering new Democrats. People might be too lazy to switch afterwards. Or there'll be other social Democrats later. And that would be a good thing. Positive.
Now, what you brought up a good point then about the Obama phenomenon. There were a lot of people who sat on the sidelines for so long, who got all fired up and did vote. But once Obama got elected, a lot of people realized it was just the same old, same old. And these are people who I think will not be willing to put themselves out to vote for a candidate again. Jim, how do you feel?
I think it's an interesting perspective. I think that's kind of what the Democratic Party is going to struggle with, is that Obama brought out a new demographic in 2008 and 2012, that because of several factors might not be there this time around. But I think this is actually, and I think this plays to Hillary's favor in the nominating process, is we've been talking about, you know, social Democrats in this conversation, and a leftward push. There was an interesting article in The Atlantic after the debate this week about Bernie versus Hillary and comparing it to the Republican side, where the Republican side, there's a strong, always been a strong pull towards less government and blowing it up, like not blowing up the government literally, but changing the big government post-New Deal American landscape. And that's why you see a Trump and a Carson, guys like that, doing really well. On the Democrat side, Bernie is proposing what to Dan is, based on our conversation here, not quite the push that maybe left that Beans and other great people would like, but it's a gross change that says the Democratic Party and the system isn't working. But there's a large number of Democrats who think the system does work. I mean, Obama is still very popular on the Democratic side. The pull, I think the lure of Hillary, and this is why people are so happy with her after her debate in terms of the media attention, in terms of the bulk of candidate selection from the Democratic Party in the last 20 years, is a pull back towards the status quo. So I think, to answer long story and to answer your question, I think that if you look at the numbers Obama had in 2008, 2012, and who came out to vote, those people might not. But I think a lot of the Dixiecrat-type Democrats who voted for Clinton, Bill Clinton in 92, who leaned Republican in 2000 and 2004, could probably go back to Hillary, I think, for a more moderate-style Democrat.
This is a question for both of you. Do you think that, given all of the media hype, do you think that Clinton could falter and wind up not being the nominee? Jim?
I don't think Joe Biden is really a real player in this at this point. And I think this debate kind of showed that she doesn't really have a mainstream, because as much as we talked about here about how the mainstream media sucks and corporate media is a load of crap, most people still consume their media that way. And that drives the narrative, whether it was Howard Dean in 2004 with his video and the media imploding his campaign for him.
Right.
I think Hillary, I'd say 75% likely that she ends up being the nominee.
Dan?
Dean Scream didn't really sink his campaign. I think that's Dean quitting at the right time, because it was as soon as he was out raising money more than Kucinich was. It's really up in the air. I can't make a prediction at this point, because things have actually shifted a lot more than I thought that they would have. If you asked me a year ago, I wasn't even sure if Bernie would even run for president, because I was assuming he would be running as an independent. It surprised me that he announced as a Democrat and that he would endorse Hillary if she won. And that just kind of cements in my mind that he's what Greens call a sheepdog candidate. Despite all the positives that friends of mine and other people in my circles are pointing out, so I do not discredit any of that. I'm not a Bernie hater. I'm going to roll out the other A word. There's a saying that some Greens have that Bush made me a Democrat, Obama made me an anarchist, meaning that you watch both parties take control with full majorities and basically fail to push for any social change whatsoever. Just there's a consensus in the establishment, there's inertia, and that doesn't change. So you take a more extremist path, a more radical path, you join a movement like Occupy, or you're inspired to take on those kind of tactics and to spread out, not just work electorally or with nonprofits or with any other establishment-minded organization that is not independent. Mm-hmm.
Now, we have just a couple of minutes left. Will you, as the campaign season unfolds, would you guys be willing to come back on Focus on Albany and share your thoughts?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
Jen?
Let's go for five.
Okay. Okay, you've been listening to Focus on Albany, and my guest today has been Jim Sheehan, correct?
Sheehan.
And he was a blogger for the Times Union, and my friend Dan Platt, who is running on the Green Party for County Executive. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and download on your smartphone, listen anywhere, anytime. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, listeners. Have a great weekend.